Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
As we kick off the third hour in style, let's hit the guest line right now. And let's welcome aboard a three-time NBA champ, now an agent in the association, and that is B.J. Armstrong. Hey, B.J., Taz of the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Oh, great. Hey, pleasure to be here. How are you guys this morning?
Good, B.J. Well, we appreciate it, man. Thanks, man, for jumping on.
Yeah, how's life as an agent as compared to life as a player, B.J.?
Yeah, it's a little different, and, a little different, and but, you know, still around the game and still working and with young people and enjoying the game. So, be able to see the game from this perspective is interesting. You saw it as a player, saw it as an executive. So, I love being around the game. I love the game and what it brings. And but most importantly, being able to help young people make the transition from college to the NBA and move on as they continue to grow in life.
I tell you what, BJ, I think it's cool that you made that transition because, you know, you have the ability, like a lot of agents don't, that you know that side, right? You know how the athlete thinks, what he feels, how he's thinking about his family, what's the right deal for him, what's the little nuances in the deal. You've been there, done that, lived it. You've laced them up. You know, a lot of these guys have it, man. I think it's cool.
Well, funny how life takes you in different places. So is this something I kind of fell into? I've always enjoyed working with players. Even when I was playing, I played point guard. So I was always working and kind of, the quarterback, if you will, out there on the floor and a kind of extension of the coach. So it was just a natural transition for me to be able to, help people navigate, as they're making transitions. We're going from one place to another and, it's a very short shelf life and you want to maximize your time. So it was just kind of a natural progression, one that very fortunate to have an opportunity to do and work with people, especially in the NBA.
You know, BJ, Taz and myself are both a fan of one of the players that you represent, and that is Draymond Green, who, coming out of, and I was doing shows locally on WFAN in New York at the time when the NBA draft rolled around that year, loved him at Michigan State, and I said, I think he's a winning player, right? And was a winning player for Izzo and the Spartans. I said that there will be a role for him with an NBA team, and I think he's a better player than I ever envisioned as an NBA player. But what about the performance of Draymond Green and how he has really transformed himself into being a superstar in the league?
Well, it really is. And, you spend so much time, and I say, when I say you, the NBA, we spend so much time evaluating players and trying to predict how they're going to be. And then I think you hit it, you hit the nail right on, right there in the sweet spot. Draymond is a winning player. And I don't know how you measure that. I don't know how you measure someone's heart. I don't know how you measure someone's determination. I don't know how you measure someone's ability to lead and play in big moments. But whatever it is, he has all the intangibles. And he brings a certain confidence to his team on both ends of the court that really – I wish I could bottle it up and be able to give it to other young players. But whatever it is, he's figured out how to help his team win games. And he has shown that ability in the collegiate level. Actually, he's doing it in high school, collegiate level, and now he's doing it in the NBA, where whatever he does, it affects the bottom line. And he certainly has had a phenomenal playoff this year, but he's had an incredible career. And the Warriors have been the beneficiaries of that.
There's no doubt, man, that Draymond brings that certain energy, that exuberance that you need to have on your roster and your locker room to win. So speaking of Golden State, I got a question, BJ. Is there any way, in your opinion, defensively, that the Rockets can stop Golden State?
Well, I think the Rockets have improved. And I think that was a big concern from them from a year ago, and they brought in some players that would help them improve in that area. The NBA is a different game now. It's 15, 20 years, it was a game where you had to defend the interior, post players, and you defended from the inside out. Now you look at the game, now you have to defend from the outside in because the three-point shot is here to stay, and it's here, and it's impacted the game in a big way. Do I think they can actually defend the Warriors? I don't think they match up with the Warriors because of the Warriors' flexibility. And what I mean by the flexibility, I mean when you move Draymond Green to the center position, it just gives them so much versatility on the floor where they basically have five players that can actually deliver the ball, initiate the offense, and play from any position. And it puts an incredible amount of pressure on the other team's defense. But more importantly, defensively, how do you attack them? Because their best, exterior defender is Draymond Green. So anytime it takes away the ability to run screen rolls. So everyone's been talking after the first game about how the Rockets have been playing, just one-on-one basketball. But it's really because you've taken away a big part of their offense. Anyone who's played against a Mike D'Antoni team, screen roll is a big part of that. And now it's been taken away because, you know what? They have the ability. They actually want you to run screen roll so that they can get their best defenders on the primary ball handlers. So it's a tough task, but you know what? They had a great regular season. Talking about the Rockets, and we'll see what adjustments they make because this is going to be a big game for them in Game 2.
Yeah, Will. I guess emotionally dealing with the fact of losing Game 1. I mean, BJ, you're a three-time champ, and you play with Michael and the Bulls, and those were great teams and great runs. You know, for those Rocket players, though, dealing after they worked all season long for home court advantage, they talked about the fact they wanted Golden State. They lose by double digits in Game 1, even with Harden going out and having an unbelievable first game. How does Houston individually pick themselves up emotionally after that kind of a loss?
Well, I think that's a great question. And everyone after Game 1 is saying, the series is over, the Warriors are better. But it just takes me back to my playing days. And I recall, going into Game 2. Game 2 is always the most important game in the series from the standpoint of it kind of sets the table for the rest of the series. And I remember we were playing the Knicks in the playoffs, and I remember Phil Jackson saying, you got here to this moment with talent and toughness. But what's going to carry you from this moment on is the character of who you really are. And I think that's important for the Houston Rockets because we're going to find out what type of character this team has. This, no secret, no doubt about it, this is a must game for them. They're a very talented group. I think they're a very tough group. But the character and the fabric of who they really are, we're going to find out tonight. And that's going to set the tone for them in the future, and it's going to set the tone for them for the rest of this series. So if they come out tonight and they're flat, I think that's going to, it'll be obvious that this is not the right group. If they come out and make the adjustments and play with the grit that you're going to need to win a series, I think this is going to make this series a very interesting one. And I'm sure the Warriors are aware of this because the Houston Rockets need this game. I mean, no doubt about it. They need it psychologically. They need it just to know that they can beat the Warriors. But more importantly, they got to win a game there in Golden State now. So if they're going to do anything in this series, it's going to start tonight.
You know, you speak, BJ, about how important in these series at this point in the postseason in the NBA, how vital that second game is. And we saw last night Game 2 of Celtics-Cavs. And I got to ask you, man, are you surprised by the lack of energy that the Cavaliers showed in the second half of that game last night?
Well, you got to give those young guys from the Celtics credit.
Yeah,
you have to give those guys credit. And you know, when you looked at the team, I was like everyone. I looked at their team, and I was like, those are nice players that they have. But you know what, Rozier, you got to take. He is a really good player. The Morris kid is a really good player.
Yep.
Jaylen Brown, I mean, he's come on. His transition from year one to year two has been phenomenal. Okay, and then the kid Tatum, as a rookie to do what he's doing. I just didn't expect this. So give those guys credit. They stepped up to the plate big time. And, I think the stability of Al Horford, what he's been able to do, I mean, he's a very unique player as a center. He's kind of a, You know, he's a facilitator. You know, you can swing the ball through him. He calms the team. He has a calming effect on the game. And he's a pro's pro. And, of course, you know, Coach Stevens gets a lot of credit for what he does out from the sideline. But I'm giving those guys credit. I mean, Marcus Smart, he is just, I mean, he's tough. He's like a little bulldog out there. I mean, he's defending. He's throwing his body around. He does all the things that you need, and he makes winning plays as a player. So I give those guys credit on the Celtics. I think they've all kind of, you know, really went beyond what we all anticipated or expected from them this year. And as a group, they are a really good group, a really good, talented group of players that have come together to play winning basketball, and I think they're playing at a very high level as a team.
We're talking to B.J. Armstrong, three-time NBA champ, NBA agent now, representing Draymond Green and others. B.J., you know, Stevens, you mentioned the credit that he gets. Were you surprised being in the game that you are, former player, now an agent? Were you surprised that he did not receive any votes from his fellow coaches in that Coach of the Year award?
Well, you know, every year, you know, you can argue, you know, such and such should have received more votes for whatever individual award. You know what? Coach Casey had a great year. I mean, don't discredit what he did with that team up there in Toronto. I mean, during the regular season, he was terrific. You know, Snyder at Utah, he had a terrific year as a coach. I mean, every year, you know, there's so many people doing wonderful things in this league. Coach Stevens has done a phenomenal job. But you know what? You can give this award to – you can make a case for three or four different coaches every year who's done an incredible job. So, in the end, I think the focus has to go back on how your team competes. And I, like many, after the injury of Gordon in game one, I didn't know what to expect from this team. Then Kyrie goes, I didn't know what to expect. So what he has been able to do with this group to keep them on focus and keep them in the – they're in the conference finals and losing arguably their two best players. I mean, that's an incredible achievement. But I don't want to discredit what Coach Casey did. I thought they had a great regular season. They had the number one seed. So, you know, you can make your case, but –
Yeah, but not one vote. I mean, and now you're beating LeBron's team 2-0 right now. I'm just saying, not one vote? You're not surprised?
Yeah, well – you know what? I've seen stranger things in this league. When you're around long, I've been around this league now for 30 years. You've seen stranger things, and but you know what? I think if you ask his peers about the respect that he's gotten in the short amount of time he's been a head coach in this league, I think no coaches. I think every coach would raise his hand and say, you know what? This guy is one of the better coaches in our league, if not the best right now. I mean, he's doing an incredible job. And certainly, you know, with this group, I think he's shown his ability to keep the group together and his leadership. So, you know, he's done an incredible job. And I think the respect from his peers goes without saying.
You know, BJ, final one for me is this. Everyone asks, and you play with Michael, who's greater, Michael or LeBron? I'll ask it this way. Watching LeBron being where you are now, having played with Michael, greatest similarity between the two players is what?
Well, you know, they're both wing players. You know, I think the similarity is they're both wing. You know, I get asked this question a lot, and I think it's unfair because the game then, talking about Jordan, is a different game than you're watching today. It's a totally different game. The way the game is coached, the way the game is played, the speed of the game, the athletes are different. You know, so I think they're just the greatest similarity that they have. They're both wing players. Michael was a, you know, I would say consider a two, as I would think that LeBron is more of a three, a small forward more than a shooting guard. You know, LeBron is a facilitator, and he does a lot of things on the floor. Where Jordan was a finisher. I mean, the thing that makes Jordan unique is he's perhaps the greatest finisher the game has ever seen. You know, he could finish the game. You know, the game is tied in the last 4 minutes of the game. You know, Michael, to me, was the greatest triple threat player to probably ever play, meaning triple threat. in the last 4 minutes of a game, Michael Jordan was either going to score the ball, he was going to get fouled, or he was going to get an and-one. In the last 4 minutes of the game, he was phenomenal. He just – he could finish the game. He could finish it. Now, every play, that's very difficult for any player to do at that level on a consistent basis. The closest player that I've seen do it is Kobe Bryant, where you could actually finish the game. You know, he could – Kobe had an amazing ability to create shots and do all the things, but Jordan just finished the games. He finished them. If there was any doubt what was going to happen in the last 4 minutes of the game, if you weren't up 10 points, Michael Jordan was just going to score every single time in the last 4 minutes. That's what he did. LeBron, that's not LeBron's, you know, greatest asset. LeBron does a little bit of this. He does a little bit of that. He can score. He can do it. But he doesn't do it with the consistency of Jordan. That doesn't mean Jordan is better or he's better or he's – it's just that LeBron is, to me, a different player. And you have to appreciate what LeBron brings to the game. His versatility of what he does. He rebounds. He takes assists. He passes to the open guy. He does all these things. Where Jordan was just, I mean, the guy just willed his – he was going to wield what he did to the game every single game. He was going to score. He was going to dominate the game on the defensive end. He was going to dominate the game and whatever he needed to do that night. So, and I just think it was a different mindset. But in their own right, they're great players. It would have been interesting to see Jordan play in this era with a three-point shot, how that would have affected how he attacked the game, because he had learned how to play from the low post. I mean, Michael Jordan basically was a 6'6 center, in my opinion, especially in the later parts of his career. He played below the free-throw line. Well, LeBron, you know, LeBron is, you know, he's bringing the ball up the court. He's initiating the offense. He's playing screen role. He's got so much out there on the floor. So, you know, if there's any similarity, they're both on the wing. LeBron is, I mean, he's, when you see him up close, I mean, he's like 6'8", 270 or something. I mean, he's just a massive man for him to be able to, you know, move around like he does. But they're both great players in their own right. But it would have been interesting to see them flip-flop and play in the different eras. And then we would get a take on, you know, who's who.
B.J. Armstrong, a three-time NBA champ, now an agent in the association. Hey, B.J., we appreciate the time this morning. We really do. And best and continued success, all right?
Thank you, bud.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Yep.
You got it. Get a good job and gave you a good answer there in terms of Michael and LeBron.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.